Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
There's an awful lot of folks out there that don't feel really safe and secure right now and are also concerned about the economy and inflation and a lot of things going on market-wise. Is this legitimate? If you're invested, if you've worked, if you've had a 401k, if you're in mutual funds or stocks, you've seen the markets doing well, going up, and everything seems okay on that front. But is this real? Can we have crazy inflation, a deflated housing market, not in value of what real estate costs, but in the number of people that can enter the real estate market because of high interest rates or unusually high interest rates that haven't been around for quite some time, and all these different record inflation numbers? We've got an expert today that's going to help us work our way through that and guide us to whether this is real, whether we should really be worried about it, whether the trillions of dollars in national debt is going to come home to roost, and what we can all do to sort of protect ourselves and make sure that we thrive either in the middle of our careers as we're earning and trying to save for retirement, or nearing retirement, or in retirement, making sure that the income is there for us. Trevor Holsinger will be our guest. He's the president and founder of Aspen Wealth in Overland Park. They're online at aspenwealth.com. Trevor's number, if you'd like to reach him, he wanted me to let you know before we do the interview, if anybody wants to reach out to him with any specific questions, you can reach him at 913-491-0500. Trevor's a really interesting guy. He maintains the overall responsibility for client financial health, investment selection, portfolio management at Aspen Wealth in Overland Park, and he's been doing this for many, many years. He's previously worked for other firms before and loves working with individual clients and doesn't really have a lot of regulations on how much you bring in, whether you're young or old, just starting out, whether you have millions, whatever it may be. He works with people of all sorts of different ages, income levels, net worth levels, and we're going to talk about an awful lot of that today. It'll be a fascinating discussion. I got to tell you, I was stunned at how many emails I got from you when I mentioned over the last couple of weeks that Trevor would be on and I'd like to have questions from you. I must have gotten somewhere around 40 or 50 emails, most of them fairly specific. Some of them had to do with picking individual stocks, and we put those into the junk heap. That's not really what he does. He's not Jim Cramer. He likes to talk about balanced portfolios. We will talk some sectors today, whether you should be in tech or retail or different types of sectors, oil, energy, things like that, and where your balanced portfolio should be. We'll get into some of those things, but individual stocks, not really what he does, and he doesn't recommend you have too much in your portfolio with individual stocks anyway. So a lot of folks like to do that on the side, setting aside, taking what they have in their investment portfolio, but then maybe keeping a few $1,000s on the side to do individual stocks on your own and try to do that sort of thing. He's not really a stock picker, not exactly what he does. He is an investment advisor and fund manager. This is really good at what he's just really good at what he does. I find Trevor to be very interesting. He and his brother reached out to us quite some time ago and said they love the podcast. They listen all the time. And hey, if you ever need anybody to talk about finances, give us a holler. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I, with the response that I got, the number of people that have reached out about this episode, we'll probably do this maybe two or three times a year as news warrants. If we see a big change in interest rates or if the housing market explodes or something like that goes on, Trevor may be our go-to guy. He's just an interesting, fascinating guy. And I've said this many times, I just love interviewing people that are smart people. And he really is a smart guy. And I think you're going to enjoy this discussion today. It is all brought to you by North Kansas City Dental, online at nkcdental.com. Office in North Kansas City and Westwood, Kansas. Dr. Bill Bush is an award-winning dentist, and he and his team would love to be your dentist. Make the switch today to North Kansas City Dental, online at nkcdental.com. The Finch Pocket Knife Company, online at finchknifeco.com, now featuring the Hellfire Pocket Knife at Shields in Overland Park and the Hill Creek Market in Lecompton. Hellfire is pretty much what it sounds like. It's got three different handles you can choose from. You can customize this. You can find it on their website very easily, FinchKnifeCo.com. Keep life from getting dull and keep a Finch pocket knife in your car or on you. Anywhere you go, you'll be surprised how much you use it. Finch Knife Co. Keep life from getting dull. Want to see a concert? Want to go to opening day? Want to check out a sporting event? Ticketsforless.com is your go-to source for anything that requires a ticket anywhere in America. Call 913-685-3322. Mention KKHI and save between 5 and 15% on every single order. That includes opening day for the Royals, March 28th. Suite level tickets to upper corners in the upper deck. Ticketsforless.com has them. They even have pregame party tickets, all kinds of cool stuff. Your promo code is KKHI at ticketsforless.com. All right, let's not waste any more time. I've got a few questions for Trevor and then a whole bunch of your questions. I think you'll find them fascinating. We had young people, older people, people in retirement, people planning for retirement with very specific questions. Also, we get a little political. Does the election matter for your money? With Trevor Holsinger of Aspen Wealth Management, online at aspenwealth.com. Hit it!
The Kevin Keatsman Has Issues conversation is brought to you by Cross Kitchens, Kansas City's home remodeler, online at crosskitchenskc.com.
Trevor joins us now, and this is going to be fun. I couldn't believe the amount of people, Trevor, that got a hold of me and wanted me to ask you questions. I've got my own first, sir. How are you today? Everything good?
Doing great. Good to meet you. Good to meet Cabo.
Yeah, he loves everybody. I'd say you're special, but he likes everybody. So I'm sorry if he jumped on you or anything like that. Was it all good?
No, it's all good.
He's not my Walmart greeter, but it's similar. He meets everyone at the door. So that's definitely a good thing. Let's start with this one. Aspen Wealth Management, which you founded, and you've been in this industry for a long period of time. You are pretty much a boutique. You're personal service, one-to-one type client relationships. Tell me a little bit about what it is that you do for anyone that's listening so they know exactly what you and your firm are all about.
We do comprehensive custom financial planning and investment management, which is, we coin ourselves as personal CFOs. You have a family wealth, family business, your portfolio, your house, your net worth might be $500,000, you might be growing it, it might be a million, 2 million, 10 million, 20 million. It's a business. It's a serious business. So we look at it as, we are the personal CFO. We will run numbers. You're the CEO. We give you information. You make the decisions.
Make the final decisions. And so what do you find with most of your clients? Are they mostly people like me that watch the markets a little bit? We see a little bit of what's going on, but I would never feel comfortable doing things for myself. Is that mostly what your clients like, is for you to be the brains of the operation?
Well, once again, it's that the client needs, I analyze the data and present the data to them. This is the financial planning perspective. So I analyze the data and I make recommendations. They need to make the decision. So if it's an investment portfolio, do you want this portfolio? Do you want this risk? Do you want, you know, if it's estate planning or if it's tax planning, do you want to implement this? So we analyze it, give them all the numbers. Oftentimes they say, what do you recommend? And then they'll say, okay, fine, I have you, I hire you. We'll go with your recommendations.
But so, at some point, you'd crack a guy like me over the head. If I came to you and said, okay, I'm 59 years old, Trevor, and I want to put 80% of my my life savings into Apple stock and 20% in a balanced portfolio, you'd crack me over the head, wouldn't you?
The first thing I'd say is I wouldn't do it.
Exactly.
And I wouldn't recommend it.
Find another firm?
Right.
Yeah. So kind of a broad question. How much does age matter? If somebody comes to you at 28 and they're just starting to save for something 30 or 40 years down the road versus somebody my age or even older that's already in retirement, everybody's a little different, aren't they?
They are, and I look at it as a piece of clay. If I'm going to help you mold your clay, if you're a big piece of clay, there's obviously more molding I can do. There's more help that I can provide. If you're trying to get somewhere and grow your net worth or grow your asset base or grow your finances or grow your piece of clay, then you got to start with a small piece. That's fine. But we all start small, and we all want to grow it so we can retire or have generational wealth or whatever.
All right. Again, his website is aspenwealth.com. And we'll give a phone number out later if you want to reach Trevor after hearing all the things that we talk about. Let's, our first financial question here, where are we in the United States right now? As we're heading into the spring, it's an election year. Stock market's done well. It seems like it's up. People keep spending. They're trying to keep us from spending, but people keep spending. How do you kind of view where we are and what are the trouble spots out there you're concerned about?
Before we get to the trouble spots, I'd like to kind of step back and say, where have we been? Where are we now? And then where are we going?
Okay.
And so where have we been is, we had coronavirus, March of 2020, Congress passed the CARES Act, which is $2.2 trillion of spending. In December of 2020, the same year, They passed the Coronavirus Response Act, which was another $900 billion.
Money we didn't have, essentially,
it's
right?
It's debt, yes.
Right, so it's money we didn't have.
And then 3 months later, this administration passed the, and Congress passed the American Rescue Plan, which is another $1.9 trillion. So that's $5 trillion of spending. All right, so that's handouts of debt from debt, but $5 trillion of spending. So we're working through that. And that was checks and just put money in your bank account. That was financing businesses, financing the Green New Deal, all of that. But at the same time, the Federal Reserve, so the Federal Reserve is the bank to the banks. They actually, quote unquote, printed $5 trillion. What's that mean? They actually bought $5 trillion of securities, put them on their balance sheet. And in doing that, somebody was selling $5 trillion of securities. So they put $5 trillion into investment portfolios out of thin air. That's truly money that they didn't have. So now we got $5 trillion from Congress and $5 trillion from the Federal Reserve. So we have $10 trillion added to the economy. What's that mean? The economy is a $34 trillion economy. So that's adding $10 trillion of dropping money from helicopters. So what's that do? It causes us to spend more. There's now we have inflation, right? So inflation goes from next to nothing to 9% in 2022. So now they've raised interest rates, and because of inflation going to 9%, or while it was rising it to 9%, the Federal Reserve just started to raise rates. They raised rates from 0% to 5.25%. This is 2022. As rates go up, the stock market goes down.
But it's been fairly resilient. The stock market's doing okay.
So there's $10 trillion out there, which creates a lot of resiliency. We're still working through that. Now the rates are 5.25%, 5.25%, 5.5%. We're still working through that, but the economy is starting to show some cracks.
Yeah.
Some cracks.
Would we have been, let me stop you right there. Would we have been better off if they didn't print all this money and it would have been harder for people through the pandemic? If we'd have bitten the bullet and not done all that, would we be better off today after a recovery that was maybe market driven and not government led?
This is the age old question of are recessions okay for us? And the government doesn't want to allow recessions now. A recession, in my mind, my opinion, is a cleansing of the excesses. So
they don't want it because they can't get elected when that happens.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. So our government, since 2008, doesn't want to allow a recession. And a recession allows you to get rid of the excesses, cleanse yourself, make businesses healthier, make the government healthier. Instead, they're printing money and inflating our way out of it and adding debt. So it's pushing the can down the road, which I believe that when there is a problem, it's a bigger problem. Instead of having small problems, it's going to be a bigger problem. And so one conversation we may have is does the debt default? Does the government default on its $34 trillion of debt?
Well, that's a question I was going to have later from one of our listeners, but we'll just address this right now. What the listener wanted to know, and I don't have the sheet in front of me. I was going to go through these later. He was simply asking, I keep hearing about this my whole life, about that's too much debt. This is not sustainable. Now I hear people say sometime in the next 10 years, the chickens are coming home to roost. His question is there a point that that the debt crushes the stock market and or wrecks Social Security? Can they just keep printing this money?
They will keep, let me finish real quick if I will.
Sure.
So the unemployment is flat in America, 161 million jobs, workers that continue to work. But what's interesting is foreign-born workers have grown from 30 million to 31 million in the last year, which means U.S.-born workers are down a million jobs. So jobs across America in the last year are flat, all right? Whether it's foreign-born or U.S.-born, okay, it's flat, which means we're not growing the economy, okay? So unemployment is fairly flat, but 45 out of 51 states plus District of Columbia are saying they have rising unemployment. So something doesn't jive there. They're saying there's six states plus DC that's kind of growing, but 45 are losing jobs. It makes you suspect.
Scratch your head, yeah. This is probably outside either one of our purviews. Does any country on earth have 31 million foreign workers? That seems impossible to me. Most countries don't have 31 million people,
correct.
I'm guessing, but 31 million foreign workers in this country?
And I'm sure it's growing.
What on earth? It's probably low. Yeah. That sounds low to me. Yeah. Does anybody do this but us? Why us? Do Americans not want these jobs?
Oh, I can't.
We don't know. Can't answer.
You're over my head. I'm in the finance. You're in the politics.
I know. Well, not politics. I'm wondering if it's a necessary evil that, like, literally Americans don't want these jobs, or whether people got rich enough, they just said, to heck with it, I'm not taking a job.
I'm sure some of them are engineers from China and India and such, and that's fine. But how many more of them from, you know, are they illegal immigrants? Are they lower wages that we don't want? I mean, let's be honest that, you know, Americans don't want the lower paying jobs.
Right.
So okay. another issue I just want to bring up is because interest rates are so high now, credit card interest rates are high, mortgages are high, car loans are high, much higher. So we were paying $230 billion of interest, personal interest, $230 billion. We're now in the last 12 months up to $573 billion of personal interest.
More than double.
It's $343 billion more interest.
2.5 times.
I misspoke earlier. The economy is $23 trillion.
Yeah.
The debt's $34
trillion. Yeah.
The economy is $23 trillion. So $343 billion of additional interest is $343 billion you can't spend on goods and services. That's 1.5% of the economy. So the economy is slowing down by 1.5 just because of the interest cost. So the government is slow to react. The Federal Reserve was slow to raise rates. I think they're going to be slow to lower rates. If I may here, one more comment here. So inflation is coming down. It's down from 9.1% in June of 2022. The U.S. government's reporting it's 3.2% today. Well, there's a third party business called Trueflation. It's a website, Trueflation. Anybody can go there. They actually take 10 million data points. All right. So they were ahead of the curve on inflation up, and they're ahead of the curve on the inflation down. And their data points are saying it's 2.1% inflation. The U.S. government's at 3.2. So the U.S. government the Federal Reserve is behind the eight ball again, which the longer they're behind the eight ball, the slower the economy is going to get, the more interest we're going to pay. And so eventually, keeping rates where they are is going to continue to drag us down a little bit.
Wow. So, man, I'm telling you, I hear all these stories. I see them on the news that so many millions of Americans are racking up credit cards and getting to their max balances on there, just buying things they have to have. Groceries, for example, their light bill, clothes for their kids to go to school. If we have a large number of people really doing that, we've got a price to pay here at some point, don't we?
Again, inflation impacts the lower income Americans the most. A high wage earner or a wealthy person doesn't buy more eggs, doesn't eat more eggs or butter and all that stuff. So this is a growing issue, not only the debt, but the growing divide of the haves and the have-nots. And printing all this money has driven the stock market and driven wealth, but the lower person is not doing better. That's a problem for us. We want everybody to do well.
Okay, what investments do you like right now? Is there a sector or a thing, or when you're balancing portfolios, is there something you've maybe in the last year or recently moved to a little heavier on this and a little lighter on this or something like that? What is it that you like right now for most, not all, again, it's age driven and wealth driven for a lot of your clients, but what are some of the things that you like right now that you think are very stable?
Well, stable is the $1 million question.
Right.
So I'm not sure. I think we're in a if you look at investments from an annual or two-year perspective, we're in a very volatile period. In 2018, the market was down 25%. In 2019, it rallied. In COVID, it went down 36%. And then it rallied into 2022, and then it went down 20%. And then the market's up last year. So we're in a very volatile period. And this debt and printing money and the coronavirus, we're in a volatile period. So to say it's stable, there's not a lot of stable, but we are on a risk. We are in a risk on environment, and there's still a lot of money out there. inflation is coming down. We're in a little bit of a Goldilocks period. So let me give you an example. In 2022, okay, when they were raising interest rates, large cap value, so the boring stocks, the General Motors, the Fords of the world, the Coca-Colas, they were down 7.7%. Okay? Large cap growth is the Apples of the world, the Nvidias of the world, you know, the Googles, the Netflix, down 29%. So that delta is 21.5%.
Right.
So in 2022, the best place to be was value. Okay, it wasn't down as much. 2023, last year, growth was up 42%+. Value is only up 11. That spread is 31%.
Wow.
So we're still in the growth phase. So it's step back. And so when rates are going up, value is going to do better than growth. When rates are coming down, the growth stocks are going to do better than value. We're still in that mode. So growth stocks, tech stocks, we are risk on, and the growth stuff is doing better and will continue to do better as long as rates continue to slowly decline.
Okay, how much of it is driven by big industrial firms, you know, BlackRock or whatever, buying all these different stocks and putting them in portfolios and things like that? And how much of it is consumer driven? Because I use my everyday experience around people, and what I know is I don't know what bad can happen to these tech companies. Everybody I know just keeps buying these stocks or has them in their portfolio in some way, or they're in tech funds because they just believe in them. And they think tech is going to get more and more dynamic and AI is coming. And Elon Musk is saying AI is going to change the world. He recently said, we won't have to work. He said, I don't know how many years it's going to be, but nobody will have to work. There will just be AI robots everywhere that can do every single job we have. And we'll have some sort of a payment plan where everybody gets paid something because the robots are doing all the work. I don't even understand what he's talking about, but I'm not that smart. But I've also talked to my mom, who didn't have running water and went to an outhouse to go to the bathroom when she was a kid, and they had to boil water to take baths growing up in Paxico, Kansas. And now she's as spoiled as anyone. If her air conditioning goes out for a day, she's beside herself. She's got a laptop and a computer, and she's doing all the things we do. And that's in her lifetime. So I don't doubt any of this stuff that it's all going to change wildly, isn't it?
It's all, AI is here to stay, but AI is not brand new.
No, but like I thought Google was AI. I thought if I search something, it gives me an answer. What does AI do that doesn't do? I haven't figured this out yet.
Right. I think it's advanced intelligence is what I would say.
Programmed by humans with an agenda.
That's part of it. Yes, that's part of it. Yes,
that's what scares me.
But what I would compare it to is this is going to date you and me. But back in the 90s, when was the internet created? The right. 90s, the late 90s.
Right.
So in 1999, the NASDAQ was up 100%. Warren Buffett was an idiot. So if you didn't own all the internet eyeball clicks companies, you don't know what you're doing. What happened after that?
Crash.
Down 80+% for the NASDAQ. So are we in that same craze? Yes. Will it crash? I don't know, but you got to be careful. So...
All right, so let's talk a little bit about, we're really close to tax day here, and most people probably have already filed and done whatever. How much of what you do at Aspen Wealth with your clients has to do with tax management, income, things like that after retirement? How big are taxes? Can you help? Isn't it pretty simple that the more you put away for retirement, the better your tax situation is pretty much every year, no matter what your age is?
What I've found over the years is... you'll be in a lower tax bracket when you retire. That's the goal. Everyone says, well, they're going to raise taxes. Okay, fine. But I've seen clients with $3 million that are in the 10% tax bracket. How is that? If you have all of your money in a pre-tax 401k or IRA, and that's all your money, let's say you have $1 million, let's say you have $500,000, you have $2 million. If that's all your money, and the government pays you Social Security, then every time you take money out of your IRA or 401k, it's never been taxed. It's been great tax deferral. Every dollar you take out is going to be taxed. So if you need $100,000 to live on, you have $100,000 of income. Great, you're replacing your income. But the issue is that's also causing your Social Security to be taxed up to 85%. So a lot of times what I recommend is have Roth money that's been taxed. So you can take that out and it's not taxed. You have pre-tax IRA 401k money. And you also have non-IRA 401k money that's already been taxed, after-tax savings, that you can tap that and not pay tax on it. So I kind of look at it as three buckets. And if you can manage those three buckets and take a little bit of each bucket, then you cannot have your Social Security so taxed.
So your goal would be to take the minimum that you have to take out in something that's been deferred. That would be an ultimate goal in retirement. Isn't there a number when you're 70 or something, you have to start taking this money out?
It's been raised. It was 70 and a half, and now it's 72.
Okay. And how much do you have to take out? Is it depending basically on how much you have? Or
It's your life expectancy. So at 72, it's about 1/23rd of your account balance.
Okay.
And then it goes down almost goes to 22.
I can't even figure out what that is. So if you had $1 million in a 401k tax deferred.
It's about 4%.
4%.
Yep.
Okay.
Which is interesting, because one of my philosophies in retirement, and it's a known thing in the industry, is if you're going to retire, you don't want to take out more than 4-5% of your retirement assets in any given year. And why is that? Because if you take out 4-5% and the market goes down 10-15%, and the next year it goes down 10-15%, and you take out more than 5%, you're down to 60-70% of your assets. Well, if the market comes back, you only have 60% of your assets to come back. Right. So the point is if you take out 10% of your retirement assets at 70, you could run out of money if the market has an issue the first couple years of retirement.
Have you found in your career doing this for as long as you have, have you found that there are two types of people? Those that will save and save and save and really think about retirement and it's an absolute thing, and others that you just can't force to do it if you try. They're just going to spend and stay broke.
It's behavior. Yes.
And so, but there's not much in the middle, is there? People are either disciplined at this or they slough it off, don't they? Like, I remember working with a lot of people in the corporate world when I was at Channel 4. And they were my age. So this is now into my late 20s, early 30s. And they were putting this money away. And in those days, this was like the 90s. And they'd say, hey, I got $75,000 in my 401k now. I'm only 35 years old or something. Pretty good. Good start here. Then they'd borrow it and buy a house and start paying the interest on the money they just took from themselves. And they get, and so today, they got nothing off that money. Yeah. They bought their house. They had their children. And at the time they made a decision, those people will never be dedicated to saving, will they? If you're going to have some investment and then go either cash it in, spend it, pay the penalties and taxes, or borrow against it.
If you want to create wealth, it's not what you make, it's what you save.
That's right.
So the key is I did a study when I first started this business. If you save 10% of your earnings, your wages, your salary, every year, your investments will make more money for you in a normal environment than you did in your entire career.
Wow.
But it's the power of compounding. And so it's the last 10 years when you've got a nice nest egg and it continues to compound where you make a lot of money.
Yeah.
So,
I got a notice from Social Security the other day and it said, hey, check this out online and see where you are because I'm 2.5 years away or whatever. I'm like, okay, I'll take a look. And of course they tempt you and go, you're going to make $1,000 more if you wait until you're 71 than if you start early, whatever. And I'm like, am I crazy? Because I always had in my head, I heard Dave Ramsey say one time, if they're going to give you money at 62, take the lesser amount because you could die tomorrow. All right. And especially if you're in a situation where you don't need the money, if you're going to keep working or whatever, take every nickel they give you and invest it with Trevor at Aspen Wealth and let him deal with this for the next 9 years. And it will be worth so much more money than an extra $1,000 a month you were going to give. You'd have to live to be 120. Does that make any sense?
So again, I did a study on that. And if you start at 62, you have to live past 80 to equate to the same amount of money. Because let's say you wait to 67. That's kind of the normal retirement age, 67 point something. So that's 5 years of payments you receive. Let's say it's $1,000 a month, right? There's $60,000. You got to make that up by an extra $1,000 per month. So you got to live past 80, and the average life expectancy is under 80. So it's like, it doesn't make sense. The caveat there is if you are still working, then they will drastically reduce your benefit. So you want to stop working if you're going to take Social Security benefits.
They give you a lesser amount if you're working, or they tax you more on it?
So let's say you retire at 62.
Okay.
You will get paid less money at 62 per month.
Right.
Than if you retire at 67 and say, I Correct. Now want my Social Security benefit.
Okay. But whether I'm doing this or not, if I keep doing the podcast and making income.
If you have earned income where you pay FICA, Medicare, Social Security tax on that.
Yeah.
A wage. That will reduce your Social Security benefit check you will not get as much. That's and so insane. If you make over like $30,000, they're going to reduce the what payment to you. Yeah, drastically. Like for every $2 more you make,
well,
you're
I'm not retiring, so that,
you're gonna lose a dollar.
My goal might just be flushed down the toilet right there. So I was stupid. I'm glad I asked because I don't know. I just always I'd heard people say, "Hey, if you can get it, because you never know when they're going to change the age. You never know if you're going to keel over and die, and the benefit helps your spouse. Whatever. I mean, people actually die before they get their Social Security. That happens a lot.
Social Security is complicated because your spouse could file on you on themselves. So if they're not working, they can file.
I personally think it's the dumbest thing we do.
It's complicated.
I think it's philosophically stupid to tell people that you're 62, you're too old to work. I think that's what they tell Americans. You're 65, you're worthless, you can't work anymore. Just take the money, go shut up, rock in your chair and be done with it. I think that's the worst thing you can tell a human being is giving them incentive to not work.
You'll live longer.
I have real strong opinions, Trevor. You know, you listen to the podcast, right? So I can't even imagine how stupid of an idea an income tax is. That's right. The dumbest idea I've ever heard.
Penalty.
I get I've got to pay a sales tax to buy this car, or you're going to make me pay for my tags, or I got to pay this or pay that. If I go choose to spend money and you want to tax me on that, I get it. You're going to punish me to work and allow some people to not work and collect money that I'm kicking in? The whole thing is messed up. And I think Social Security is the same way. Look, I feel like that's not even my money. If I'd have been able to, if I took all that money since the time I was 19 years old or 17 years old, and had all that invested with you over all these years, it would be millions. Okay. I'm not going to get that from Social Security.
Right.
Never. I'll right. never get that. But I want it the second I can get it because I'm scared I'm not going to get any of it.
But the government sells fear.
They got me scared, don't they?
And the fear is, you're now fearful, but the fear is you don't have enough money to retire on. You don't have enough money for this. The latest one is long-term care.
Yeah.
About 10 states are exploring required long-term care coverage, insurance, a tax. They're exploring it. It's another government branch that they're looking to get in your pocket.
I just want to live long enough to get my money back from them. I've not calculated how much I've paid in. I don't know what that number is. I don't even need interest from all these years. If I ever lived long enough, there's an age, I'm sure, where I live long enough, I've got that money back. I just want it back.
And what your employer paid.
Right.
They're paying half.
Yeah, that's right. I just want it back. I just want it back. All right, ready for some questions from some of our listeners?
Let's do it.
Okay, here we go. This is from Beartooth, he says. We're just going to go by nicknames here. I like that. He's 38 years old, steady income, good health. He has a Roth that's currently sitting down about 80%. Most of the securities have a dollar amount that is less than $5, with a few delisted and a few more on the brink. He says his understanding of Roth IRAs is not tax deductible unless you completely close the account. He said he sort of treated this like gambling money. He's young and put it in here and thought, I'm going to buy some really cheap, risky stocks and hope to hit it well. What should he do now?
He should clean up the account and invest it starting over. And starting over means what I own this today. So he's right. There's no tax deduction. Even if he closes the account, there's no tax deduction. If he takes it out, there's no tax deduction. He just takes his money out. He doesn't get deferral. So even if it's down 80%, if it's down to $1,000 or $10,000, he might as well start over, contribute to it again. The Roth IRA is a great vehicle. Unfortunately, he lost a fair amount of money, but now he needs to learn from that lesson and be more conservative and say, okay, do I want to still own these securities? And if the answer is no, then go buy securities that are good long-term investments.
And he's 38. He should be able, let's say 25 years, he's 63. You should be able to build really nice wealth over 25 years, shouldn't you?
Yeah, he can contribute. He can contribute to a Roth if he has low enough earnings. But there's also, here's a little trick for investors. So you can put money, this is going to get complicated. I probably shouldn't bring this up, but I will.
If it starts flying over my head, it's going.
So
people driving down the road right now, right?
So you can put money into a Roth IRA if your income is below a certain threshold. Now, let's say it's below $100,000 for an individual and $200,000 for a couple. It's generically about it. If you have a 401k that you contribute to, then you can't contribute to a Roth. But you can contribute to an IRA and not deduct it. I would only do that if you have no other money in your IRA and you quickly convert it to a Roth IRA. It's called a backdoor to the Roth. Congress is looking at doing away with it. But the issue is if you already have an IRA and you put more money into it. You have pre-tax and post-tax. It gets complicated on the tax situation, and it's not beneficial if you already have an IRA balance. But it's another way to contribute to a Roth IRA, which is money that's never taxed.
I hear a lot of people, I've heard this a lot through the years. Most people's largest investment is their home, and they have more equity in their home than they have invested for retirement or save for retirement. Is there a ratio people should shoot for? I'm not talking about people with $10 million of net worth, because they may have a beautiful $2 million house and $8 million sitting there making all this money for them. So not them, just regular folks that are going to get on a treadmill and do this thing for 30 years and pay off a house and save for retirement. Is there a ratio between real estate holdings and securities?
There is. And one of our financial planning balance sheet analysis that we do is, if you're going to retire, you need to have about 20% of your assets in non-working assets, cars, personal property, houses, to support your lifestyle. Okay? So it tells us your lifestyle. If your lifestyle, if you have a $200,000 house, you need about $800,000 to retire. $200,000 house is very modest. It's well below average in Johnson County. $800,000 will support you. If you have a $2 million house, you probably need about $8 million to support your lifestyle. It's shocking how that ratio really, really works.
And if your $2 million house is paid for, you need $8 million?
It tells you
tells you how you're living.
You travel a lot. You've got country clubs. You've got expenses. You like to.
I see what you're saying.
If you, not many people have a $2 million house. But okay. Tell me somebody has a $2 million house and doesn't spend money.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So 20%. And
if you have 20% of non-working assets, it tells me your propensity is to spend money. You have nice cars. You have nice golf clubs. You have nice country clubs.
So whatever equity somebody has in their home, you should be trying to accumulate four times that for retirement.
Yes.
Perfect.
That's a goal.
That's very simple. That's awesome.
Now understand, when you're 25 years old, you're not close to that, but you inch closer and closer and closer. And when you get near retirement.
But you can also stay with it for life.
Correct.
Right? You can either add more to your mortgage every month, or if your portfolio is going up, you can do that, right?
Right. You add a mortgage and it adds a little more complexity to it, but.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Okay. All right. This one from Chris. Here we go. Hopefully I'll be retiring in 8 years with what I believe to be enough money to fund my retirement, my wife's retirement, and my kids. I believe in generational wealth. So what advice do you have to protect the wealth so my girls can have it when me and my wife are gone? He's 50. He has girls in elementary school. He started late in life, and he's very concerned about making sure that his daughters are taken care of after they're gone, because they'll probably be at an age where they have small kids. Should you be worrying that much about your kids at age 50?
That's a personal choice. This is personal choice. I'm a big believer of, I have girls. I want my girls to be independent, not just to have gobs of money and be spoiled. I want them to be productive citizens in society. But generational wealth is a choice to say, hey, I want to give my kids money, and that's fine. So first of all, I think he needs to make sure he stays diversified, because one thing that would derail that would be taking too much risk and losing 50, 60, 70% of a portfolio because of a market downturn.
We wouldn't be reckoning his personal choice to say, make sure you take care of you and your wife first and keep in the back of your mind, let's not blow this money as we're going, let's leave it for the girls. But make sure we have enough for us in case, as we've talked about with AI, medicine, science. I mean, we literally could be talking about people that are 50 years old that could live to be 140. I believe that. I think there's a chance. If you watch the scales of the way life expectancy has gone up, what happens when we really figure this out? When we have complete generations of people that didn't smoke and don't drink and have lived clean and healthier foods and all these different things, what's going to happen? I mean, I do believe humans someday are going to live to be 150. I don't know when that is. I don't think it's going to be me, but I'll be honest with you. I'm going to be just a little bit disappointed if I don't live to 100. I expect the changes in medicine and science to be there.
They will be there, but people have to change also with their habits.
True.
So,
and you get it hereditarily. You can get a brain tumor and that's it. We can't fix that, whatever. But I'm talking about people that are otherwise healthy. My mom is 91, for crying out loud. You know, you don't want to know what she ate and how she lived and how many years she smoked and all the things they did. Right. She's 91, pretty healthy. That's crazy.
So my next comment would be, what I made a comment earlier would be, Chris shouldn't spend more than 4 to 5% of his portfolio assets, which that's actually the requirement for endowments. Endowments require to spend about that same amount of money.
4 to 1?
So 4 to 5%.
Oh, of what you have, yeah.
4 to 5%. So if you have $1 million, you spend $40,000 to $50,000 of that per year, which means he won't run out of money, which means there's money left for his kids.
That's right.
So I got one more. One more idea, and that is a second to die life insurance policy. And I'm not a huge life insurance person, but to check that box of generational wealth, he could buy a life insurance policy on he and his wife. Since it's two lives, it would be cheaper. And he can make the beneficiaries his kids. So it would be income tax-free, estate tax-free. So basically buy that life insurance, and you can even get it out of your state if you have enough wealth. But that would guarantee some wealth to his next generation, and then he has the money left over for him to spend with his wife. So another idea.
All right.
Another thought I have for him is this gets complicated with all the debt. How do we get out of this debt issue and inflation? And we just saw 9% inflation, and with all this debt, I think the U.S. government has the propensity to print money out of the situation versus default. So a big fear if he's 50 in the next 30 years of his life is inflation. How do you protect yourself against inflation? Real assets. You own your home. You own rental real estate. You own physical assets. You own commodities. Not use assets. Not a fancier car that's going to go down in value.
Right.
But you own farmland that will go up in value. You own rental real estate that you can raise the rents with inflation. What if inflation's 30% a year? I mean, I don't know, but history says inflation is probably out there in the future. So what would make the wealthy and the poor closer together and narrow that gap is inflation. So if you have massive inflation, you got a guy worth $10 million, and you have a lot of inflation, let's say 300% inflation over 10 years, it's not out of the question. That guy didn't have much money anymore.
He's not as rich as he was.
And so I wouldn't put it past some people in D.C. to think, oh, wait, we want to narrow the gap. How do we narrow the gap? Inflation.
Now, here we go. You know my audience is conservative, and I got some questions for you now, Trev. Here we go. Do you think, this is from Chris, do you think the Fed will lower interest rates this year and how many times? And will they do this for the Democrats in an election year? Does that have anything to do with it?
The two-year U.S. Treasury bond, which is currently yielding 4.75%, follow that. If that goes down to the low fours, the Fed will start cutting rates. If it goes to the threes, they're going to cut faster. And right now, it's a 0.5% below the federal funds rate, which is what the Federal Reserve cuts. So on the way up, the two-year Treasury went from 0 to basically 1.5%. So they were 1.5% behind inflation when they started raising rates. On this side, they're again the 2 year Treasury. Follow the 2 year Treasury. 2 year Treasury is 4.75. If it gets down to 4.25, they're going to cut rates pretty quick. So if it goes down there in the next 3 weeks, they're going to cut in a month. If it keeps going down, they're going to cut more. If it stays up and inflation ticked up last month just a little bit, which caused the 2 year to tick up, which basically delayed any rate cut. So I believe the economy is slowing down. We talked about interest payments. We talked about a little bit of unemployment uptick. The two-year is coming down. It's trending down. It's just slower than people expected. So I would expect probably 2 rate cuts in the second half of the year.
If they lower up 0.5 point and then 0.5 point, won't real estate go crazy? Aren't people just sitting there saying, oh, even lowering my interest rate by 1 point or 1.5 points, now I'm going to buy? Won't it just send a signal to people that are just sitting on the sidelines?
I think it will help.
Right.
But if interest rates, I mean, they went from 7% 30-year mortgage to 6%.
Market
hasn't really changed. If it goes to 5%, those sitting on the sidelines, sure, there'll be some. Real estate's already pretty crazy. It's already expensive.
Yeah.
A comment on that. Johnson County Real Estate is up 7.2% per year the last 10 years.
Pretty good, huh?
So a 200. Well,
not when there's 9% inflation. It's not. But
it's basically double. So the rule is 72 divided by 7. So take the rule to 72 divided by 7. It's 10 years when you double your money. Houses have doubled in the last 10 years.
All right. Doug says he wants to set goals and believes in setting goals. On a monthly basis, how much of his income should he be investing? If he were to call you and say, I want to start a portfolio, what's a good general number for people to say? Let's just say that it's a married couple that makes $100,000 a year. What would be a good number for them to invest toward retirement?
He said monthly, and in my comment earlier in this conversation was 10%. So if you, so my study many, many years ago was if you save 10%, you can retire normally about 62, 65 years old. If you save more, you can retire earlier if that's your goal, or you'll have more money. So if you save 12%, you can retire maybe a year earlier. If you save 15%, you can retire. There becomes a point where you can't retire at 40 very easily. But the point is minimum of 10, shoot for 10. And if you can get up towards 15, you're going to be ahead in case there's ever an issue.
For our younger listeners, I'll just come clean here. I always thought that I'd be ready to retire the second I could, and then I didn't. And I'm like, no, I'm not ready to do this yet. I still have things to do, and I don't want to be bored, and I like broadcasting, and I like whatever. Let's find something else. I'm going to guess you're the same way. Did you ever think, oh, I'm going to retire as soon as I can, and then didn't? Because I know people do that, because I'm one of them. I don't want to walk away and move to Arizona and play golf every day. It sounds better than it would be.
I'm a believer you need a purpose.
Yeah.
Every single day.
Got to get up and do something.
And so... To me, investing is a lifelong passion and person. So purpose. So if I do it for myself or I do it for others, right? So you got to have a purpose. You have a purpose. You have a passion. I have a passion.
You could do that in retirement for yourself, though.
They all say it's not working if you enjoy it, you know. So
all right, this one from Craig in Gypsum, Kansas. I like this. All right, I know the question everybody around here is talking about. He is this gentleman, 66 years old, approaching retirement. What's the best advice? Depending on whether Sleepy Joe wins or Donald J. Trump. I think we know how he's voting. Does the winner of the election matter?
The winner of the election matters, but it's not just the executive branch and the president. Congress is, so if there's red Congress and red Trump, then I think we'll be more business friendly. And if it's a blue wave and it's Biden and a blue Congress, then I think you're going to have more spending. So if you're a business owner, then I think you want definitely a red wave. If you want handouts, you're going to want the blue wave. But I want to make sure that doesn't tie into the stock market necessarily. So the money printing, the handouts, all it takes money, supply and demand to drive up equity prices and bond prices. It takes money. So if we have more money, however we get it, those prices can go up. So if you look statistically, blue president or red president, Republican, Democrat president, it's fairly equal. And actually, a Democratic president might be a little bit better off in the stock market, slightly. But the issue is how do you get there? All right. Are you building a healthier economy and companies, or are you giving handouts? So we can have a good stock market. We have a good stock market under Biden, but it's because of the handouts.
Yeah.
So be careful what you, if you want your next generation, you know,
right,
to have a good foundation in country and economy, then you might want red. But if you want immediate stock market benefit, you might want more handouts.
All right, our final question is from Brad, who asks, ask Trevor if, well, tell him I own my house for 30 years and also own a condo at the Lake of the Ozarks. If I sell my home, do I have to reinvest the money I gain from the sale of my house into another property? Or because I've owned my home for 30 years and own another property, can I pocket the gain and invest it?
So that's a very good question and complex question. So Congress passed a law that allows you, if your income is under $45,000 individual or $89,000 joint, you pay no income tax on the gain in your house. If you're above that, which many people are, then you can exempt $250,000 per owner. So if there's two of you that own the house, husband and wife, it's $500,000 jointly. So you can exempt $500,000 from the sale of your house, but you have to meet an ownership and use test, which means you have to own the house for two of the last 5 years and you have to use that house majority of your time. And use is, do I vote from that location? Do I file tax returns from that location? So if you have a house in Kansas City and a house in Florida and you're trying to avoid taxes, you know, the issue is where do you live? You have to live in that house, and you can do this every 2 years, but you have to live there two of the last 5 years.
Okay.
So one important comment there is, if you go to Amazing Garage Floors, you better keep track of what you spend to improve your house, because that's going to raise the cost of your house and minimize your gains. So a very important thing is once this law was put in place is tracking what money you spend on your house.
As you go.
As you go.
Yeah. Yep. Awesome stuff. Okay. Personal question here for me. What's the best chance of me winning money in a Vegas casino this weekend? Is there a game that has the best? I've heard people say blackjack. I don't know, man. I just think go up to that roulette wheel, play the black, hope it doesn't hit green and it hits black more than red. That sounds like my best shot, man. Come on. I've watched that thing go an hour without hitting green.
Craps is the best odds.
Craps is the best
That's
odds.
Officially How do I do? Play the best odds. But you have to play line? By all the rules.
Yep. Play the pass line?
Is well, and then you have to back it up. And the backup bet is even odds. So the only reason that craps is a fair game is because you put $10 on the pass line and then you back it up with $100. That pays even money.
That's when I roll and hit my number, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, right. So roll my number. I roll a 6. I'm on the pass line. And now I'm going to back $10 bet up with $100?
That's 101 odds. That's 10-1 odds. So yes, that's 10-1 odds. If the table says 10-1, yes.
That's what they'll allow you to do.
A lot of times it's 5-1. They minimize that.
Oh, okay. So it maximize what you can bet there.
Right.
So, okay. So, if they allow.
Because that's your one advantage. That's
my advantage is take that 5 or 10-1 odds on the pass line when I'm rolling or anybody's rolling.
Yep.
Right. And the good numbers are 6, right? 6 is a good number, right? 6 and 8.
6 and 8 are the most common numbers next to 7.
Yeah. So you want to roll 6s and 8s all day. Roll 6s and 8s all day at craps you can't lose. Is that what I'm hearing?
Leave your debit card home.
Yeah, leave your debit card home. That is great advice. That is fantastic advice. All right, Trevor Holsinger is the president and founder of Aspen Wealth Management. They're online at aspenwealth.com, and people can call you if they have questions or if they heard something here that piqued their interest or if they'd like to invest or if you have a rollover 401k or you've changed jobs and it's just sitting there and you haven't moved it. With your new employer, you're accepting new clients. If people want to get a hold of you, they can just call you at 913-491-0500. Is there any target client or you work with pretty much everybody?
We work with pretty much everybody. We'll help those that, you know, we give advice. I mean,
and it starts with a consultation or something, come into the office.
It's a first introductory meeting. And it's if we can't help you or there's nothing left for us to do, and we say, hey, you need to go do these things. You need to go save money. I can't
save
money
for
you, right? So yeah. I guess my only comment would be, you know, every listener should have a plan. You know, if you're driving down the road and somebody swerves in your lane, you better have a plan, right? And so if the stock market goes up, what's your plan? Are you going to take chips off the table? If the stock market goes down, right? What's your plan? Are you going to add to that investment? I mean, expect these changes. If something happens in your life and you're unemployed or you're disabled or, you know, have a plan. So think through life and things are going to hit you good and bad. And so, you know, plan ahead.
Yeah. I wasted probably 15 years of my career not investing very much. I wasn't very good at it. We had little kids and the whole thing and I just blew it off and I'm young and whatever. Man, if there's anybody out there that's young, that's listening, get in the game, no matter what it is. If you can just put $300 or $400 a month away somehow and start saving for somewhere down the road, you won't believe the difference it will make over time. Time is everything, isn't it?
Well, it's the power of compounding.
Yeah.
So it's your money making money for you. It's not what you save, it's what your money can make for you, but it takes time.
You're going to be my go-to guy when something bad or good happens in the economy. Can I just call you up and have you on?
It will happen.
It will happen. Will happen, right?
Well, good and bad. I mean, there are times where it's like, okay, the coast is somewhat clear, or there are times where the market's going to, you know, the economy is going to look rough. I mean, that's just life.
I could just call you and like, if you're playing golf that day, you'll just pull over, right? And we'll come on it. The podcast, whatever you got to do.
We'll do it.
Trevor Holsinger, president and founder of AspenWealth.com, Aspen Wealth Management in Kansas City here in Overland Park, AspenWealth.com. Call Trevor if you have any questions or if you'd like to get started or if you'd like to move any funds that you have. I'm sure he would love to talk to you about that. Income tax, cash flow planning, risk management, retirement, investment, 913-491-0500. Enjoy the March Madness, my friend.
You too. Enjoy your trip. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Well, that was just great having Trevor Holsinger on the podcast from Aspen Wealth Management, online at aspenwealth.com. And again, if you didn't hear what you wanted to hear today on this podcast, he said, just feel free to call him and he'll talk to you about whatever your issue is on the phone. 913-491-0500. You can call Trevor and ask him anything. If we didn't get it covered today, he said, call me. I'll be your resource. 913-491-0500. That is for Aspen Wealth Management in Overland Park. And if you ask for Trevor, you're going to get straight to the president and founder of the company. And he will personally speak with you. He's that big a fan of the podcast and that big of a fan of the folks that listen to this podcast. He will personally answer any specific questions that you have about your situation. If you'd like to give him a call, 913-491-0500, online at aspenwealth.com. It was all brought to you today by Earth Effects Outdoor, your new landscaping company. You look for hardscapes, ponds, waterfalls, kitchens, or just spring cleanup? EEOutdoor.com is your landscape company. Daniel Hanks and his man Darren, who comes out here to my place and cleans up a little bit every now and then for us. They installed some beautiful lighting in our backyard. They do great work. EEOutdoor.com. Ideal Health KC is online at IdealHealthKC.com. Dr. Kip Van Camp is regenerative medicine. If traditional things have not worked for you, big pharma, surgeries, operations, why not talk to Dr. Van Camp and see if this may work for you? Blood spinning, tissue therapy, all kinds of great treatments are helping millions of people across the country, and nobody in Kansas City has been doing this longer than Dr. Van Camp. He is no Johnny come lately. He started this 15 years ago when his dad became ill. He completely changed. He's a double board certified interventional radiologist and said, I believe in regenerative medicine, and this is where he's taking his practice. Pretty cool stuff. 913-745-5300 for IdealHealthKC.com. And, of course, Amini's Galleria, home of the Copper Dome, 105th and Metcalf, outdoor furniture tent sale going on right now through April. Get on it and save big at Amini's. Live more outdoors this year with Amini's. Our thanks to Trevor Holsinger of Aspen Wealth Management for joining us. That was kind of fun. I'd love to hear your feedback. Shoot me an email if you enjoyed that. And if you would like to hear more financial talk on the podcast, I can work more things into the regular podcast that I do. I can have Trevor on a couple times a year. We can take all kinds of questions from folks. Do you enjoy finances? Is that something you're interested in? I don't know. I've never done that, really. I've done sports. We've done an awful lot of politics. We've not done a lot of wealth management, finances, economy stuff. But if you enjoyed that, I'd love to hear your feedback about Trevor. Just shoot me an email, kevin@kkhasissues.com. That's kevin@kkhasissues.com. Our thanks to Trevor Holsinger of Aspen Wealth Management for joining us here on Kevin Kietzman Has Issues.
Kevin Kietzman Has Issues has been presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet GMC and is produced by Crooked Tail Media. Please hit the like or follow button wherever you listen or give us a review. For premium content, podcasts, and weekly newsletter, join as a patron at kkhasissues.com for as little as $5 a month. Support all our sponsors and other conservative businesses at thekklist.com.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media, Incorporated.